Kimberly. I'm a compulsive overeater, and I just real quickly, I want to get out of the way. I have a before and after picture since you don't know me, but the before picture, not at my biggest. I can't believe I let somebody take my mother take that picture, actually. That was back in 1980s, I think. Yes, just right after I graduated from college. And then the other one looks a lot more like me now on any given day. So I have been in OA since May of 1986. I've been abstinent since September of 1986, and I'm maintaining a 65-pound weight loss. And I am so grateful to OA. It is when I get asked to speak, I haven't been asked to speak I don't know, real recently. And I go back and think about it, I just think it's such a miracle. So I want to talk to you about my miracle. And I'm a talker, so I have to really be careful to time. And I came in yesterday downstairs, and I just sat and wrote things that I wanted to tell you, especially if there are any new people here. So, some slogans. I love slogans, and I have some that aren't really OA slogans. And the first thing that came to my mind is it doesn't matter what I think, it matters what I do. And what I will tell you is that I came to OA 1986 when I was living in Paris. And so the bottom of a basement in Paris, we had mostly AA literature then. The step books were the big book, AA big book, and the AA 12 and 12. We did have the OA, OAs for today and some OA pamphlets. And we ordered them it was very fancy when we needed literature. One of the young women in the group called her mom and asked her mom to ship it to us. There was nothing real fancy to how we were doing OA in those days. I didn't think I was particularly like the guys in the big book, but I was fat, and there were some people in the OA meetings who used to be had been fat and were no longer fat. And so I just did what they told me to do. I went to meetings. I got a food sponsor, and they told me to go to three or four meetings. They told me to write my food down and call it into them. And so I did that. That wasn't right from the beginning, but I did that. And I read the big book and for today, and I went to meetings. That was what my OA program was. The big book I read like a novel. It was okay. I was a literature major, a French literature major, so maybe I was a little snobbish. It was okay. I didn't relate to it all that much, but it didn't bother me. And what it taught me was that beginning experience that it really doesn't matter what I think, it matters what I do. So I didn't believe I was like the AAs. I didn't believe I needed to stay or I would stay. And I went to meetings and read some of the OA stuff they had. And I took some simple early in OA actions. And so it didn't really matter what I believed, it mattered what I did. And then that caused the second phenomena to take place is that sometimes recovery sneaks up on you, or at least it snuck up on me in unlikely ways. So I had been reading the big book. I had been doing a little writing, and maybe I had a couple months of being good on my diet and not believing in the big book at all, and didn't think I was a foodaholic, an alcoholic with food. And one day I was walking up the street near my apartment, and I walked by, it was a great corner. There's this corner where I lived. Three of the points in the corner, there were patisserie pastry shops, and one had a cafe bar. It was perfect. And so I was walking through that corner, and there over on that I'm looking at it. I can almost see it still. That corner was the pastry store that had the miniature pastries. And suddenly the thought crossed my mind that I could have a pastry since it was a little one. And maybe I started negotiating. Maybe I could have two or three of the really small ones. It wouldn't hurt me. And I truly believe that it was because I was reading the big book, looking down my nose at it, like reading it as a novel, that I realized when I said, maybe I could have a little pastry instead of a big one. It was a lot like that guy in the big book who suddenly the thought occurred to him that he could have a little whiskey in his milk. And I realized, oh my God, I'm Jim. I didn't know his names in those days. We weren't on a first name basis yet, but I'm just like that guy in the big book. It was just thinking I could have a little pastry was just as crazy. And I could see that putting whiskey in your milk for an alcoholic was crazy. First of all, that's disgusting. It ruins the whiskey and it ruins the milk. And second of all, it wouldn't work for an alcoholic. I was very good in knowing what would work for the alcoholic since I wasn't one. So that was my first spiritual experience in OA. It snuck up on me. I was just like those early AAs. So fast forward a bit, someplace along the line in the early days, I got a food sponsor. My food sponsor helped me better define my abstinence, and it was 3001. Three meals a day, zero in between meals, zero sugar, one day at a time. It was France. My sponsor told me I could have alcohol if I could handle it. That we had to deal with. Well, while I was still living in France, and ultimately I refined, added another zero, and it was zero alcohol because for me, wine and alcohol is just liquid sugar. So I had my 3001. I kept going to meetings and I stayed abstinent, but I really hadn't gotten much farther than that. Didn't have a step sponsor. I was feeling good. And then I learned another thing that's really important, and that's just to beware the lies my disease tells me. So my disease told me I was good enough, reading the big book, going to meetings, taking a lot of good actions. Didn't need to get a step sponsor yet. I could do that soon or later. And I got a little lazy with my program, and I ended up believing a lie. And I was on vacation, and I ordered an iced tea in between meals, or maybe it was a seltzer in between meals. Either way, it came with a skewer of fruit. Fruit was on my food plan. I could have fruit. So maybe, I don't know if it was exactly between breakfast and lunch, or probably more likely between lunch and dinner, but middle of the day, I ate the fruit. It would be okay if I had fruit in between meals. And wrong actions, right actions lead to recovery, wrong actions lead to relapse. And it soon went beyond fruit, and I was eating abstinent foods, clean foods all day long, not abstinent. And I was lucky. I was really lucky. My relapse was short and it was informative. But I have seen people die over the years from believing lies and relapsings. And today I try to take it very, very seriously. I have to keep taking the actions that led me to recovery and lead me to recovery. It doesn't matter what I think or what I want. It matters what I do. So I got abstinent. I decided I was going to start. Well, actually, I didn't decide anything. My food sponsor told me I was going to start, get a step sponsor and start working the steps, or I wasn't going to have a food sponsor. So I asked the scary big book woman in the meetings to sponsor me. And she was really into it. She was scary. And she got me started on the steps. And I worked the steps with her. And then She had a break, and I immediately got another sponsor who wasn't nearly as scary. And then I moved from France to New York, and after a little bit, got a sponsor here. That first step sponsor I got, I don't, I, she kept me tethered to recovery. She wasn't the sponsor I needed for the long term, but just calling and being accountable and talking about the steps. And when I would say, oh, I was going to do something, and she would laugh and say, oh, she laughed really sweetly and say, oh, I never heard of anybody do that in recovery. And it's like, oh, crap. She was just what I needed. And through that period of time, from the scary person until after I got back to the States, I got started on the steps and have been working and living in the steps with subsequent sponsors ever since then, with maybe, I want to say, a 15-minute break, right? With a not a very long lapse. And what I found that surrender is what ironically led me to staying abstinent, to winning. I thought that I surrendered, that people would have to surrender when they were losers. And surrender for me was what the winners did. I surrendered to the program. I stopped worrying about what I thought or what made sense. And I just did what I was told to do and worked the heck out of that slogan that right actions lead me to right thinking and right believing and to recovery. And since then, I have, I guess, just been working and living in the steps. It leads me to new ideas. I certainly, some days I feel like I have that really close spiritual connection with my higher power, and some days I'm full of self-will and not so much. When I'm in a serene place, I can meditate and ask higher power to come in. And I have a great mantra or technique that I use when I'm not serene. And my mantra is STST. And I don't know. Well, anyway, I think I came up with this, but it doesn't really matter. And that is the saying, what step, tool, slogan, or tradition apply? And for me, this works really well because the spiritual surrender and the emotional surrender are easier, if I am in peace and harmony with my surroundings, right? If I'm in, it's not even fit spiritual condition, but I guess it is. If when I'm really in fit spiritual condition, I don't need a STST mantra. But sometimes I don't know, I envision a foxhole. I'm in the foxhole and the grenades are flying and the shrapnel's flying, and I'm really emotional and anxious. And it's really hard for me to stop and go, I learned that when I lived in California in the 70s. I need something really practical if I'm like getting a tennis racket and swatting away the crazy thoughts that are coming to me in my emotional breakup and or breakout or whatever you would call it. And in the originally I called it an STS, what step tradition, no, what step tool or slogan helps, because it came also out of the big book, because in one of the stories in the back of the book, I still want to call it Dr. Alcoholic Addict, but acceptance is the answer, talks about, oh gosh, what does he talk about? When loosely, when he does the right thing, he gets the right result. You know, when he was working his program better, his wife got a lot nicer, right? So saying what step, tool, and slogan for me were taking the searchlight of my obsessive brain away from the problem towards the vicinity of the solution. And what he says, when I live in the problem increases. When I live in the solution increases. And so STS was my way of taking my mind off the program. And or I ask my sponsees a lot of times. So what, I didn't know what to tell them sometimes. Has this ever happened to you, sponsors? Your sponsees got a problem, and other than what step do you need? I come up short. So I would say, well, what step applies, or what tool applies, or what slogan can you use? And then I lived in New York then, and the Westchester Intergroup asked me to come to a retreat they were having and talking about STS. And I hope you'll love this. I find it shows my great humility. I heard that our trustee was going to be at the retreat, and I decided I better put traditions into the mix so she would like me. So I came up with what step, tool, slogan, or tradition apply to me. And I love that. It is really, for me, something that helps me take my mind and my spotlight off the problem and onto, it can help in any solution, in any situation. There was actually a time when I came up with tradition that was help. I was at work. We were preparing for this meeting where we were going to have 200 or 300 insurance agents show up. So imagine the fun. And everybody was arguing, and I want to do this. And it was crazy. And I stopped everybody and I said, what's our primary purpose? Because when I did STSTSTSTST, primary purpose came up. And I'm sure if there were any people in 12-step recovery, I outed myself, because who would say that? But our primary purpose, everybody had a different purpose, and we were able to agree on a primary purpose. And it helped me get through it without my brain exploding. Now, usually it'll be today, often it's a step, tool, and slogan, and occasionally a tradition that will pop up. So that's really, for me, when things are calm, maybe not happy, maybe stressful, but I have time to sit and try and connect with my higher power, I can pray and write and use the tools. But sometimes I really have to help ask myself, because I get overwhelmed. What step, tool, or slogan apply? What tradition applies? And that always brings me back to center. And it always brings me back to my recovery values, if that's the right word. And I have to say, my recovery, the steps, the traditions, the slogans, and the tools have gotten me through some really difficult times, traumatic, difficult times, and just normal old, boring, difficult times. And I know intellectually and emotionally and internally that if I weren't here, I would be miserable, because the only tool I had before OA to deal with pain and anxiety was food. And today I mean, it's a lot more than steps, tools, slogans, and traditions. I have loving OA friends who sometimes lovingly but directly guide me back to center. I have, when I'm being really tough on myself, I have OA friends that put things back in perspective for me. When I'm not taking responsibility, I have the opposite, people that help me see. And I love my life today. I'm going to run out of time. I love these timers that you can see, and I hate them. Everything that's good in my life is because of OA. I met my husband in OA. I had a great career. I would have dropped out of the insurance business early on because it was hard and it was scary, and those people were obnoxious. and whatever. I had a good career. I'm able to have perspective in global situations that are worrisome. I think I said that nicely. And I am able to deal with people. And then oh, we're definitely going to turn off that negative. I'm able to show up for people when they need me. And I'm grateful to be here. And thank you so much, Anne, for finding me.